today. I'm speaking with a special guest artist of the Western Michigan University School of Music, Keith Kirchhoff, who is returning, really, to campus as a soloist this time, but has been here many times as a collaborator with Christopher Biggs. Together, they created the Splice Institute for people interested in learning about electronics and music and how to write for it. So, Keith and Chris, thanks for joining me today on WMUK.
Thanks so much for having us.
Looking forward to your solo recital tonight. It begins at 7:30 p.m. and is open to all, free concert to the public. And this is a concert in which you will be performing primarily keyboard music.
Yes. So it's all solo piano music, playing just a traditional, you know, acoustic concert grand piano. And there is, every piece is accompanied by some electronic component. So there's it's really sort of chamber music with a computer. So some of the pieces, the computer might be interacting and responding to what I'm playing. Other times, the computer might just be playing back a fixed track. But throughout it all, I'm playing the piano like any ordinary classical pianist, and then I have playing with me this electronic component.
I imagine all of these pieces are quite modern or written recently. Mm-hmm. Are they also written by colleagues and friends?
Most of them are. So the oldest piece is from 2001, which actually feels kind of, it surprises me how old 2001 all of a sudden feels when everything else is, you know, brand new. So most of the composers on the program are friends. But that first piece is by a composer, Olga Neuwirth, and I haven't actually ever met her in person, but have long loved her work, and she has this wonderfully compelling piece that kicks off the program that I'm excited to play.
Okay, and that piece is called Incidens Fluido?
Yes, Incidento Fluido.
Incidento Fluido.
Yes, and it's in the piece, she has me place speakers of some kind inside the piano, and they are playing back a recording she made of a French electronic instrument called the Onde Martineau. Mm-hmm. And so it sounds sort of like sine tones that are kind of fluctuating from low tones to high tones, and she explores a lot of microtones in there as well. And I take a type of sticky tack and place it on certain nodes on the strings to make the strings sound like they're out of tune. So it's not actually detuning the piano in reality, but it gives the aural perception that I'm playing something very out of tune. And so these sort of out-of-tune notes combined with the sounds that are coming from the piano, from these speakers, creates a very haunting sort of sound and piece. It's a very blocky piece as well, so that she kind of sticks to one sound world for a period of time, and then will just jump to another different sound world, and then another one. And it's virtuosic. It's really different from everything else on the program, especially since all the sound is coming from the piano itself. It's not coming from loudspeakers or anything. But it's very unique from everything on the program and really starts things off pretty well, I think.
I love the idea that you have these old school pieces of tackiness on the strings, which is, you know, John Cage and all of the prepared piano, original stuff along. And she's also combined it with a tape that goes along with it. Tape's the wrong word, but
it's essentially the same as, you know, and sometimes we still call it tape. You know, it's not literally tape, but when I think because the, you know, this medium started with us playing back tape, we still, you know, we call it tape sometimes. Okay. It's all right.
You control the start and stop of some of the parts of this piece?
Yes, yes. So it was initially composed with the idea of having a CD player hooked up to these speakers. And I've since taken it from the CD and put it onto my computer so I can control things by a foot pedal. So the beginning has a guided improvisation that is unaccompanied by the electronics. And in the original, you need to start the tape when you start and kind of gauge how much time you have to do this guided improvisation. And I've shifted it so that I can play it as long as it feels appropriate and then press the pedal and we can start right away. So it gives me a little bit more control over the arc of the piece. I've also added a timer that I have also linked to the to the playback of it so that I can see, make sure that I'm staying on track to be aligned with certain events at certain times.
You mentioned how odd it can seem that this piece from 2001 feels like a different time back then.
Mm-hmm.
And that brings me to the point that both you and Chris Biggs are, if not at the forefront, then, you know, right in the middle of this idea of combining acoustic instruments and electronics, and have been for a decade and a half or so at least. And you founded the Splice Institute.
Mm-hmm.
Have you had a moment to step back and realize, wow, I think we're here, we're pushing it forward, we're doing the best we can, and this community, you've reached a whole lot of people within this community. Chris, you've been traveling a lot lately on sabbatical, so you've seen what other centers there are and what they're creating, at least around. Have you been within the U.S. in your travels, or have you gone beyond?
Yeah, I've only traveled just a little bit recently. But in terms of Splice Institute, we bring performers and composers together to do new work for instruments and electronics, largely traditional instruments. And the idea is to actually train performers on something that they get at no educational institution, which is actually operating the electronics themselves. And I say none, but there might be one or two. But we do it very intensively. And by the end of the week, they're running pieces by themselves. And then we get composers trying to up their game on their electronic music production skills beyond what they would normally get in their education. And then in terms of the community, yeah, we've seen pretty amazing things from it. Everybody knows what Splice Institute is in the country in every composition program.
Mm-hmm.
We get huge number of applicants. We are getting more performers every year, and getting new music performers in for summer programs is challenging. Some of them have actually shut down, and we're getting more performers every year, I think, because we're doing something no one else is doing. And because of the community aspect of it, people stick together, and then the collaborations that occur have legs afterwards. And we see it in people who come to Splice Institute being finalists for awards, getting into various festivals and things like that, and it's very rewarding.
When is Splice Institute, and how do you apply?
It's every June in Kalamazoo, Michigan. This year it's the 23rd to the 29th, so we do tons of concerts, so I encourage people in Kalamazoo to look
mark
way
your
ahead.
Calendar
yeah.
now.
It's all free,
yeah,
too.
It's all free, and the concerts are very good, and we actually do some historic pieces in addition to all the new pieces, and it's great. The Splice Ensemble, which Keith is a member of, does a concert every year, and we have an ensemble down Ante coming, so that's all very exciting. Applications are closed. Keith and
look
I will
for
be
2020.
Yeah, exactly. Keith and I will be working on evaluating some things tomorrow.
Yeah. I'll just remind listeners that it is Keith's time to shine in this concert tonight, a solo performance by Keith Kirchhoff of a whole bunch of new pieces, some of which what you'll see is a pianist at the Steinway, and then you'll start using, you know, your ears will start saying, what is this? What is happening? So there's so many different ways to incorporate sound programs and various manipulation into the physical performance.
Yeah, I think the best, you know, when you're describing it to people, for myself, I think one of the best ways to describe it is really it is a classical piano recital. You know, how we've defined classical piano music has changed a lot every decade, really, but every century. You know, what a classical piano recital would have been for Mozart is very different than what it would have been for Liszt. And this is now really, truly classical piano music of now, of today, of the 21st century. And that looks very different from what classical music looked like in the 20th century. It's not, you know, you mentioned John Cage, but we don't have tons of preparations in there. We're not, you know, doing experimental sound art where we're just lighting things on fire. And like, it's surprisingly conservative compared to what a lot of the 20th century offered. But it's unique and it's original to now. And it's just a great opportunity to see what is happening in the music world of today, and what is inspiring composers now, and how they're using the technology that we have available to us everywhere, and how they're integrating that into the concert setting and using the piano as that medium to bring it in.
Keith, did you grow up with traditional piano lessons?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I had a pretty rigorous kind of piano conservatory type education. So I'm one of the weird kids who wanted to play the piano from the time I was three. And I moved to a wonderful teacher in middle school. His name is Dr. Paul Wirth, a tremendous pedagogue. And I was very much of a one-track mind, always wanted to be a pianist. And so when I started studying with him, I remember for the first several lessons, he would lecture me saying, "Are you sure you want to do this? Because this is going to be a lot of work. If you do this, if you really want to do this, you're not going to be involved in any extracurricular activities. You are not going to be doing this. You will only be playing the piano." And he's like, "And your life, you're going to be traveling all the time. You're going to have a hard time having a family. You're not like this is, you're not going to make any money." And I was like, "This sounds great. Let's do it."
He was telling you this when you were when I, eight it was, or nine? Or?
Yeah, I would have been in like seventh grade.
Okay.
And I definitely was like, "This sounds wonderful. Like, there's nothing here that sounds bad. Let's do this." And so, so pretty much from that time, I was required. He stripped my technique down back to the bare bones, completely rebuilt my whole physical approach to the piano. And then, by the time I was in high school, was required to be practicing between 8 and 10 hours a day. We had very strict pieces that we had to learn. We were required to learn things very, very quickly. He would give us a piece. We'd have to learn it, memorize it and perform it within, 48 hours. He would have us go to, we traveled a lot for competitions. But as a kid, I loved it. My parents were always very apprehensive about, they didn't want to raise a too crazy of a son. They tried, so they didn't. There were a lot of things he wanted me to travel and do that they ended up not kind of putting their foot down and saying, "No, we don't want our 14-year-old traveling all over." But I would have, even now, I still wish, I look back on it so fondly. I was like, "Oh, I wish I could go back and just practice 8 to 10 hours a day and just have that be everything I do."
And your parents kept checking in.
Yes. But they were always very, very supportive. And they really, really were.
Oh, wow. Keith Kirchhoff performs tonight at 7:30 p.m. And it's a recital of pieces by some colleagues, some composers you simply admire, two female composers, which is always one of the happy things about new music concerts. We see a lot more women's voices. So we do have some examples to play today.
Yeah.
I don't know where to begin.
Well, let's start with a piece. So the program is set up so that I've tried to curate two very, very different musical aesthetics that are kind of, so there's a lot of different sounds we can hear in music of today. And with this program, I tried to zone in on two very distinct ones. So ones that, pieces that use a lot of noise and distortion as their main musical sound source. And then pieces that are very harmonic, kind of lush, things that, I hate to use the word beautiful, but things that, stereotypically we'd say, "Oh, that's really nice, that's really pretty." So, and I don't mean that in a disparaging way, like these, pieces that use, that are drawing on very traditional harmonies and traditional tonalities. And I put them up right next to each other. So the last piece on the program, which might be a fun one to start with, is written by one of our fellow colleagues at the Splice Institute, Per Bloland. And it's a piece I premiered here last summer at the Institute. And it's called Los Mermelitos. And it's a part of what will be a much larger work. It's in the end going to be about 20-ish minutes. And this is a kind of 5-minute version of the piece. And it's inspired by a novel by the Mexican novelist Juan Rulfo titled Los Mermelos. And he's an author that is very well-known in Mexico but hasn't gotten a lot of attention north of the border. And so this is a novel, I think, from the 50s. And basically in it, this protagonist goes to his old hometown, and it's now a ghost town. And the town is and you feel and hear the souls in the wind. And so thus that murmuring is the sound of all of the souls of his ancestors.
I was thinking of that
and
word,
by
yeah.
by the end, they claim his soul as well. Oh. And so this is so Los Mermelitos is sort of it's a complete piece in and of itself, but it's a much shorter kind of preview of this larger work.
Does this also sound kind of rock and roll in a way?
It is definitely very, very virtuosic.
Rhythmic.
It's Pear uses a lot of distortion sounds, lots of feedback sounds in his electronic manipulation of the piano sound, and I think it's a super gripping piece. People tend to get really excited by it at the end. I think we should give it a listen.
Per Bloland is the composer of Los Mermulitos, and it's a piece from 2018, a brand new piece. If you tuned in during the music, you heard both piano and electronics, and my guest, Keith Kirchhoff, is a specialist piano virtuoso that has also devoted a great deal of the last 15-some years to advocating for new music, and in the field especially of electroacoustic music. So you described it very, very well. You know, the idea of lost souls and almost a prison of you can't escape if you try to go back.
I think it's honestly, to me, even sometimes a chilling piece. Some of the sounds that he's creating through the feedback sounds, these sort of high screeching sounds, I can hear almost like the call of a banshee or something. Like it strikes me very much as, yes, those dead souls.
The piece we were talking about that begins the program, you operate a switch and it begins a pre-recorded piece that you mm-hmm. play with. In this case, is this a reaction, a program that reacts to what you're playing, or is it also?
This one is, so he actually created a digital model of what the piano would be and then processed all of the sounds off of that digital model. And for him, because he uses so much feedback, by not using live processing, it makes it a little bit more stable, so that if I'm in a venue that with people who may not be very comfortable working at the soundboard, there's no risk of this blowing up and, you know, hurting everybody's ears. So this one, actually, I'm triggering certain sound files that have been pre-recorded, but the process was created live and then just recorded from that.
Are you able to practice just using a pair of headphones, or do you need to find a space where you get a live speaker response?
In my home studio, I have some studio monitor speakers that I have set up in the room so I can listen to them. I don't worry too much about the fidelity of the speakers. I tend to keep them kind of down. I don't like using headphones to practice because I want to hear the piano sound.
Of course,
and so much of what I'm doing is still trying to make a good sound and a good tone at the piano. So it's important to me to keep most of my practice really focused on that piano sound itself.
The program is called the Electroacoustic Piano, Acoustic Attacks and Sonic Refuge, and it begins at 7:30 tonight. Keith Kirchhoff is the soloist. Pieces include works by yourself, mm-hmm. as well as the two we've mentioned, Olga Neuwirth mm-hmm. and Per Bloland. How about some other composers on the program?
So obviously here with us, is Chris Biggs. So we're premiering a new piece of Chris's tonight. And Yeah. Chris, why don't you talk about it?
Yeah, why don't you tell us?
Yeah, so it's a new piece called Monstrous. For piano, a controller called the Seaboard Rise, and electronic sound. And so there's a graphic novel that I really enjoy. And in the novel, there's kind of a person who's has a evil being inside them, or maybe an evil being, we don't exactly know, that kind of comes out of them. And so I'm using the pianist as the protagonist, as the person, and then the electronic sounds and this other type of keyboard as these things that are alien to the person that they're coming to have to come to terms with in some kind of way. So there's kind of a background narrative structure that relates to the performance context. And then the Seaboard Rise is a very interesting thing. So if anyone's ever played a MIDI controller connected to a computer, just like, you know, a piano-like thing that you press, it gives some basic information about how hard you hit the key and how long you hit it for. But this keyboard does a lot more. So it gives you that same information, but it also constantly tracks pressure, and it also knows the height on the key, so like y-axis, and also knows the x-axis, the horizontal position on the key. So that's about four dimensions of data that can be mapped to any kind of sonic outcome. So Keith can, you know, press it, and then he can move his finger up, and that can change, make it brighter or darker, and then he can wiggle his finger, or he can slide, and he can change the pitch. So there's this traditional keyboard he plays, and then he has to toggle back and forth, which is very demanding, between this other type of instrument that's really a different type of instrument to play, and the piano, and then manage all that. And it's like this alien thing, and it's part of the kind of theatricality of the performance that he has to try to manage this alien thing, while the piano itself is highly processed in real time, and again, all these other stuff's coming out. So simple actions, and then these kind of things just flow out, which is kind of commensurate with the visuals in the graphic novel.
I'll talk about dual nature and dueling natures. You know, Keith, you can't just switch from piano technique to what was the controller?
Seaboard Rise.
Seaboard Rise. I mean, without a few seconds of piano technique on the Seaboard Rise.
Yeah, it's if you play it like a piano, it will not really work. Like it technically works, but it doesn't sound good. So because of the nature of the keys, you know, on a piano it doesn't matter where in on that y-axis I'm pressing the key, it will still sound the same. But on this, that does change how it sounds depending on where I hit it. And the shape of the keys, if they can even be called that, are a little different, and they're smaller than a traditional keyboard, so it's the accuracy on it is really odd. It doesn't really work to just have my 10 fingers on this thing. I actually tend more often to play it with just one or two fingers and kind of poke at it like a kind of that's I'm when I'm doing it, I'm reminded of that stereotypical image of someone who may not no computers, and they're just kind of using their two pointer fingers to type on the keyboard. And it's almost my approach on this thing because it gives me much more accuracy than trying to get all of my fingers, which are even thicker than those keys are themselves. So it doesn't really work to put a whole hand on there. I just need to kind of pinpoint with two fingers.
The last piece of yours that I had the privilege of hearing in a live setting was Displaced, I think was the name of the piece, mm-hmm. for a small chamber ensemble, where the electro elements were so finely woven in that there was no obvious, at times there was just no obvious change or now we're doing this and now we're doing that. It was so expertly done, and I was lucky enough to hear it in a non-traditional setting at a brewery with such fine musicians visiting from the school across the state, and so well performed in a brewery where they had decided to include not to cancel trivia night in the next room. But still it was really fantastic to hear it. Yeah. But it sounds in this case like you are more willing to show one and then the other as a
Yeah, so maybe I'll just say exactly what happens at the beginning. And I'll also say that one of the amazing things about watching Keith play these like programs is both because he's such just a great pianist, and also in that he's doing this whole other level of interpretation and biofeedback, because he has to respond to electronics in real time. And it's not all the way to an organ, but both his feet have to be doing pedals all the time in a different way than typical piano, because he has his 2 feet on the pedals of the piano. And then also he has a pedal for almost all the stuff. So there's a lot of just things to watch and to think about how things are happening and to be impressed by. And then I add this other element that's this whole other thing that's fun to see how it works. But at the very beginning of this piece, he plays a piano chord, and the electronics that come from that are almost unrecognizable as piano, but they all are based on the fact that that happened. If he didn't do that, nothing could happen, because it requires the input signal. And then the computer is automatically triggered when he plays that chord to start recording it. And then he presses the C board, and when he touches the C board, it stops the recording and starts playback of the piano backwards, but at different speeds and pitches. So then it's kind of like this event that's very pianistic, right? It's just like an attack on the piano that resonates, and there's this stuff that comes out of it that's very alien to that we wouldn't even recognize, even though it's all based on it, so it's like internal to it. And then the C board takes it as well, but, you know, pianos can't make notes go backwards. They can't go louder to right. It's quieter to louder. So it does this thing that the piano can't do right away.
For some reason, it popped in my head that so many composers throughout time enjoy their little tricks and secrets and putting themselves in pieces. And this is a very direct way of making a piece refer to itself, even though the listener doesn't necessarily know to stay organic might be a word you could use there. How fun.
It really is a lot of fun.
It happens a lot.
Yeah.
A lot of pieces do refer to themselves with electroacoustic music.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that makes sense to do because, you know, you can use the piano as that sound source, or whatever that live instrument is as that sound source. So you can reinterpret that sound and manipulate it electronically in a myriad of ways, just depending on, you know, your creative impetus behind it. And that's one of the really fun things that can come out of, you know, doing live electronic processing is you hear the piano create a sound, and the listener will interpret that sound however, you know, one will choose to interpret a piece of music. But then you're also hearing how the composer is interpreting that sound with what you're hearing in the electronics. And it creates sort of an opportunity to have a multidimensional interpretation happening. So you're interpreting what the piano's doing, you're also hearing how the composer interpreted, and you're interpreting the composer's interpretation. And it's really unlike any, you know, any other type of musical output, I think, in that way.
May we hear another example, perhaps?
Absolutely, yeah. So maybe we'll play my piece on the program, which is absolutely nothing like Chris's. I wish we had clips of Chris's piece, but the joy of a premiere is there's no recordings of it yet.
It's called Chris's piece is called Monstrous, and it premieres tonight.
Yes, yeah. Yes, and I really encourage everybody to come and check it out. It's going to be really, really fun. So my piece that's on the program, it's the second piece on the program, is called Second Canvas. And it's a sequel to a piece that I wrote maybe 10-ish years ago called White Canvas. And in that piece, so these pieces that I have in the sort of canvas series are pieces to where I'm challenging myself to think differently about what I'm writing. So with White Canvas, I had suddenly had this moment where I realized that everything I had been writing up to that point sounded exactly the same. And that really bothered me. And I was actually in a hotel with Dan Van Hassel, whose piece I play next on the program after my piece. And I remember him, I was telling him this, and he was saying, well, why does that matter? I don't know well, who cares if everything sounds the same? And I was like, well, I care. So White Canvas was an attempt at finding every aspect of my music that I was finding in every piece and then doing the exact opposite. And people still told me it sounded like everything else I had done, so I don't know if I succeeded. But so with Second Canvas, I wanted, I again was realizing that there was some aspects of my writing that struck me as unusual or odd. So when I'm not doing, you know, electroacoustic piano music, I'm also a music director at a 303-year-old Unitarian Universalist church in Boston. And I've been doing church music since I was in sixth grade, so I've been doing it for a long time. And with this job, I write a lot of choral music for our choir. And I really I've always kept these two worlds extremely separate. And the type of music I write for a concert stage bears very, very, very little resemblance to the type of music I'm writing for this church choir. And so with this piece, I wondered if I could try to find a marriage between these two. So kind of borrow from some of the inspirations I take when writing for this church choir and marry it with the sort of things that drive what I would do in a solo piano piece. And so the piece is a sort of onstage meditation. And in it, I pits several different strings at the top of the piano. And all of these pitses that I'm doing are recorded and then played back at various intervals that will create a sort of underlying harmony. The intention is that it sounds sort of like bells, so a sort of, bell tree. And in the middle, towards the end of the piece, I introduce this hymn tune that is an original hymn tune, but it's meant to sound like a hymn you should know, but you can't remember what it is. So it's really just supposed to kind of evoke this sense of nostalgia or recollection of past church experiences, which could be either positive if you are a regular churchgoer, or they could be very negative if you've had, maybe very bad experiences in whatever church tradition you went to. But whatever that is, the hope was that it would evoke those memories and kind of take you into that space of the church. So that's your Second Canvas.
Second Canvas. Performed and written by Keith Kirchhoff in this performance, and his live recital is tonight at 7:30 p.m. in the Dalton Center Recital Hall at Western Michigan University, and it's free and open to all. We heard Second Canvas for solo piano and an electronic enhancement by Keith Kirchhoff, and he's in the studio here with me right now, along with Professor Christopher Biggs of Western Michigan University. Together, they founded the Splice Institute, which has been responsible for training both teachers and students in the possibilities of electroacoustic music every summer in June for several years now. And Keith, you're back as a soloist tonight in a concert at 7:30 p.m. Are you actually on tour right now?
So I'm playing, taking this same program around to several places. I just got back from California, and I'll be playing it in Buffalo and Denver and New York, and so just taking it around throughout the country and sharing the same program with folks. In each place, I might add or take out a piece here or there. So a lot of the places has me play a piece by maybe one of their faculty composers as well. So that kind of adds a slightly different twist to the program every time.
For you, is this a showcase for electroacoustic piano music? And you also called it Acoustic Attacks and Sonic Refuge. So you're showing kind of the dichotomy.
For me, it's the program, like the electronics are interesting, but the program isn't about the electronics. The program is about the music. And if I were to be playing a program of Beethoven piano sonatas, I probably wouldn't be talking all about the piano and like, oh, I play this chord, which means these hammers are moving up and hitting the strings, and then this damper is released off of the string, and then when I let go, the damper mutes the string, and we just talk about the music. And with this program, I actually make an effort in the program not to talk about the electronics, because none of this music is about those electronics. The electronics are the tool that the composers have chosen to express their piece, their ideas, and it's interesting, but I also think pianos are really interesting. So it's to me really about this, about the music itself.
The piece of yours is Second Canvas from 2018. I'm curious, how many pieces are on the burner at any one given moment, not only for you to write for yourself, but are there people out there currently working on pieces that you will eventually play?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I tend to work in, so I'm often, you know, I'll premiere several different pieces a year, but I'll try to tour with a single program for a couple of years. So this is the first year I've done this particular program. I'll tour with it next year as well. And then, but in that time, I'm already in touch with composers that I want to be working with in 2021. For the people who I'll be premiering, I'll be touring with your piece now for the next 2 years. But then there's always pieces that I might play, you know, once or twice throughout the year. There's next month, I think I'm playing three or four different things that are, you know, new to this year that I'll be playing once or twice and then kind of retiring. So there's the music that you're really diving into to get to know intimately. And then there's the music that you play a couple times that you learn fairly quickly, and just to kind of give that opportunity for that music to be heard, because it should be heard, and it, you know, but that may not be the stuff that I'm diving into.
What are some trends in new music? Have you seen any, spotted any?
I think there are definitely trends. There's a willingness to borrow from any and all musical style periods and all musical genres. So whereas in the 20th century, I think there was from a lot of the, you know, more avant-garde composers of the 20th century, I think there was a reticence to borrow from Baroque or Romanticism, and certainly from popular music. I mean, you saw that maybe in composers like Bernstein or Gershwin, but in the more avant-garde composers, you definitely didn't. And I think that now there is definitely much more of a willingness and openness to borrow from everything. You could be borrowing from hip-hop, or you could be borrowing from extreme modernist ideas, or you could maybe even throw in a fugue if you want. And it's kind of a giant toolbox of all of what music has given us, and how every composer chooses to take certain pieces. Maybe the toolbox is the wrong analogy. Maybe it's more like a big Lego set, and you're just given all of the Legos that have ever been created, and you get to create this fun giant structure with whatever pieces feel the most appropriate to you. So it's both, as a result, I think it's kind of all over the place, and yet there is also that unifying idea that really anything can, and you can draw from anything, and it's all equally valid.
That's a great trend. Well, although there are people like me that might miss some references here and there.
I certainly miss references, but I think that's the case with all culture. You know, if there's movies that will reference, I guess actually I just mentioned Legos. The Lego movie is a perfect example. They're constantly referencing either old Lego sets that if you weren't a Lego collector in the 80s, you're not going to get, but yet the movie is still really funny to everybody, you know, including kids who definitely weren't around in the 80s because they're just 6 years old, but they're still laughing uproariously next to their parents. You know, so yes, there's references that we miss, but I don't think that a well-crafted piece, I don't think that compromises the impact of the piece.
Well, that pretty much wraps up our time here, and I didn't want to say goodbye without giving Chris a chance to mention anything else that might be going on at the School of Music that we can look forward to. Anything, the summer's concerts will be announced pretty soon, I would think, mm-hmm. for the Splice Institute. And as we talked about before, they're excellent musicians, and the concerts are all open and free mm-hmm. to the public.
Yeah, so tonight is Keith's concert, but tomorrow night is the Western Student Composers Alliance concert, which is student composers, and that's always really interesting to see what young people right in Kalamazoo are creating. Chris Wild is a cellist, and he's giving a concert on March 29th, I believe, and he's a great cellist, so he'll be doing some exciting music. I'm missing one thing that I feel bad about, but that's okay. I'm not looking at a list. And then at Splice Institute, starting on Monday, June 24th, Ensemble Down the Ente will give the first concert. So that's really exciting for us that we have a guest ensemble. And then Keith, with other members of the Splice Institute, along with harpist Ben Meltsky, will be doing concerts of works the next couple of days. And then the Splice Ensemble does a concert. And then there'll be three participant concerts. And that'll all get up on our website, which is splicemusic.org, by May. And we'll do our best to let you know however we can.
Okay, finally, Keith, we have like 2 minutes to get into a tune called Lush, Intrinsic, and this is written by...
Composer Dan Van Hassel, and it's an older piece. It was from 2009, and he wrote it for the very first electroacoustic piano tour I had ever done, and it's on my first album as well.